morality of immortality.
Welcome to the Sci-Fi Christian, bringing you theology at warp speed. I'm Matt Anderson.
And I am Ben DiBono, and we are back.
Oh, you did it.
I remembered. As I was driving over here, I knew that I had a line that I had forgotten the last few times I did this.
Uh-huh.
And so I specifically reminded myself of what that line was.
Good work, Ben.
Thank you, sir.
Ben, do you remember last year, the year 2011?
I do remember that year.
Do you remember that was the year we actually started doing this fine podcast?
Yeah, we're almost at 2-year anniversary.
Yes, and last year, in our first year, we were nominated for a podcast award,
Yeah. Which
happened at podcastawards.com.
We lost to the Mormons.
We did. We lost to the Mormons, but this year we're not going to lose to the Mormons.
I don't know. I think with, you know, Mitt Romney in the news, everybody's interested in Mormons. So,
Okay. So right now, we need you, before October 14th, this is really important, before October 14th, 2011, I think it's actually October 15th, but I'm saying the 14th just so people don't mess it up.
Yeah.
Religion and inspiration is the category. The name of the podcast you should vote for is
The Voices in My Head, the Rick Lee James Podcast.
Stop. It's the Sci-Fi Christian, the one you're listening to. And our website, which you'll have to enter in, is
www.thescificristian.com.
Thescificristian.com. So yeah. We need you to go and vote. First step, get nominated. Second step, then I need you to vote like crazy daily for 15 days or
I'm
something.
I'm not going to do that.
Come on, Ben. We need to win.
I did nominate us.
Okay.
Can I tell you what the deciding factor was?
Yes.
Because there was a little bit of tension about who I was going to vote for or nominate.
Whatever.
I don't know what Rick's website is, and rather than look it up, I decided it was easier just to type in ours.
Why would you vote for him instead of the podcast you helped create?
Well, you know, I've had some good conversations with him. I have a guest again this week and next.
I was just going to say, we should tell everybody that you are featured on this newest episode this week, and you'll be on again next week because it's a two-parter all about your Catholicism.
Yeah, we talked through the top 12 misconceptions about Catholicism.
Did you actually put together the notes?
No, he did.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So he's into this.
Yeah, well, I mean, we kind of talked about it. I threw out a few ideas. But yeah, he came up with a top 12 list, which is pretty cool because that's two more than 10.
Yeah, so you can, I believe his website is rickleejames.com.
Does that sound right? I'll go out and nominate him too now.
So rickleejames.com. Go to his website. Check out Ben featured there on the podcast, Voices in My Head. So,
yeah.
Cool. Well, I haven't listened to it yet, but I definitely will later, at a later date.
Someday.
So tell everybody what we're doing today, Ben.
Well, I actually have a little update on old Sci-Fi Christian issue that I wanted to get out there.
An old one?
Yeah.
Like what?
Well, so you remember our first feud, Matt, was with the Sci-Fi Diner.
Yeah, the Sci-Fi Diner. I remember them.
And
hey, can I interrupt you real quick? Before you go too far, I just want to send them out a congratulations. They just hit episode 150.
I bet it was about Star Trek.
Okay. So congratulations to Scott and Miles.
Good job, guys. By the way, speaking of feuds, Rick, when you do eventually listen to the Voices in My Head podcast, on which
Me?
I am a guest, he would like to be a candidate for the next feud.
He wants to feud us in 2013?
Yeah, he does. He does.
Wow. I don't know. Let's see how this one goes. So far, this year's feud hasn't been going great.
I think he even made fun of you a little bit in an attempt to...
What?
An attempt to get on the feud.
All right.
So Rick Lee James would like to be a part of the Sci-Fi feud in 2013.
All right.
So I think we can make that
happen.
I'll
see what I can do.
But what was like? Oh, yeah. So first Sci-Fi feud. You know, we talked about Star Trek in that feud.
Mm-hmm.
And I was criticized because it was said that I hate Star Trek, but I haven't given it enough of a chance.
Yes.
And so I had vowed I will give Star Trek another chance.
I don't remember you, but I remember you saying, I don't care, screw them, I'm not going to watch that show.
I sat down on Netflix because all of Star Trek shows are on Netflix, and I decided I'm going to give this another chance.
Okay.
This was a few weeks ago. So I sat down to watch the first episode of The Next Generation.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, and I thought, okay, you know what? I think this is going to be good because there's a lot of people out there who like The Next Generation. Uh-huh. You know, it's supposed to be a great show. And then, you know, sitting down watching the credits and I see so-and-so as Q. And I thought, okay, that's good because I know about Q. Like, I know enough that he's supposed to be a really good Star Trek villain.
Yeah.
So I'm excited, actually. I turned it off halfway. It is unwatchable.
That's how bad.
It was so bad.
I think Q gets better as he keeps going.
It wasn't... I mean, he was bad, but he was one of the better parts of the episode. It was just... I felt embarrassed for Star Trek fans. Seriously, guys, how can you like this? This was unwatchable. Wow. Like, it wasn't just, oh, this isn't my thing. It was... I felt embarrassed for people who enjoy it.
What specific? Give me some specific thing that you didn't like about it.
Okay, the acting was terrible. The writing was... absolutely atrocious. The whole thing was unbelievably corny and cheesy. There was not a single exciting moment. And I'm not just talking like I need action, because you know that's not me. But it was just dull. Okay. Everything about it was dull. There was not a single interesting character, not a single engaging moment. It was poorly written, poorly acted, poorly directed. The special effects were decent for their time.
Okay.
So this isn't even like, oh, it looked dated and I don't like that. You know, I thought after watching Star Trek the Motion Picture that was as bad as
gosh, it got. Don't.
I was wrong.
You think the pilot of TNG, The Next Generation, is worse than...
At least the first half of it. So I couldn't make it through.
To be fair, now I've watched quite a bit of Star Trek The Next Generation as a child. To be fair, isn't it possible that after the pilot it kind of progressed and characters developed in a better way and... so you just have to kind of get past the first stuff?
Okay, it's possible, but how long do I let Star Trek fans keep telling me, oh, you just haven't watched the right thing, when everything I watch sucks?
I hear you. I hear what you're saying. I think there are probably better episodes in the pilot, although...
I'm sure there are.
To be honest, I don't even remember what the pilot was about. I haven't watched it in years.
I'm sure there are better episodes, and I'll even admit that if I've watched enough, I probably could find some episodes I enjoyed. But how much pain and suffering should I have to go through?
You did like the J.J. Abrams version, though, right?
Yeah, but that's like, you know, an entirely different okay. thing. And he didn't like Star Trek either. And so he's making it specifically as somebody who didn't like Star Trek.
So do you think you'll ever give that a chance again? Like, will you watch Deep Space Nine or Voyager or Enterprise?
Probably not. I'm sure we'll get a lot of responses. Or you gotta watch this episode because it's so much better. Seriously, Star Trek fans, everything I've watched sucks. I do not like Star Trek, and I cannot conceive of why you guys do either. It's terrible.
I will disagree, because I do like quite a bit of Star Trek, but I don't like all of it universally.
Yeah, yeah. So I think we can at least agree that some of the hardcore Trekkies who are like, oh, every episode's the best. You know, those are people are a little bit out to lunch.
I don't know if anybody ever says that.
Miles. Sci-Fi Feud 2013.
Wow.
Redux.
We're just doing a lot. Okay, so... well, great. Thanks for that.
Yeah.
You know, speaking of the Sci-Fi Feud, I usually save this for our listener feedback episode, but I got a message today on the Sci-Fi Christian's very own Facebook page, and I have it right here. The ultimate podcast rip-offing will be revealed in our next podcast entitled Justice League, Past, Present, and Future. Justice will be demanded. Take notice, Sci-Fi Christian.
Is that was you or that?
Oh, sorry. That's from Strangers and Aliens on our Facebook page.
Oh, okay.
Sorry about that. I should have been more specific. So Strangers and Aliens are saying that the ultimate podcast ripping off will be revealed on their next podcast. So watch for the Justice League podcast that they release. I don't think it's out yet, but I have a feeling it's going to be about your hatred for Superman.
Oh, who knows?
Who knows?
I certainly won't.
Nice. All right. So, perfect. I think that takes care of all the business. So, in conclusion, vote for us for the podcast awards and...
don't watch Star Trek.
Don't watch Star Trek. And
stay tuned. Something about Strangers and Aliens.
Stay tuned for more things about Strangers and Aliens.
Somebody please let me know what part of the episode to listen to, because... okay, nothing against their podcast. I just don't listen to podcasts.
Anymore? You used to.
Since I started, you know, because I drive up to school and I've got an hour drive one way. So I'm listening to some NFL podcasts.
Oh, nice. Do you want to give everybody an update on where you're at with life? Things have changed pretty drastically.
Oh, yeah. So, I became Catholic. That's old news.
You became Catholic, and I really want to do a follow-up episode with you. I know we've been having a hard time getting our schedules back together, so here we are on this afternoon doing this right now. But next time we get together, let's do two episodes, one Catholic themed and one sci-fi theology themed.
Works for me.
I actually have a list of questions that I'm going to...
oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
I've gone Catholic. I've officially done protesting, you know, so I had my last Sunday. Yes. At Epic. I don't know, remember if we mentioned
that. And like we were just mentioning, if I can find it online, I'm going to try to see if Skip is okay with me playing your very last sermon.
He's fine with it.
of your entire life, you'll never preach again.
No. Likely not.
Likely not. So we'll release that.
Theoretically, here. It's possible.
No, not possible.
It is possible, theoretically.
If you become a priest?
If I become a deacon, but I don't think I want to become a deacon.
Do deacons, they're allowed to give the Sunday message?
Yeah.
The liturgy?
Yeah.
Nice. I learned some Catholic words so we could talk about that. I wanted us to be able to relate.
Specifically Catholic.
I want Pope. I learned it. I was trying to like research some things I could say that were Catholic-y, because I don't want us to like fall away from each other. I want our friendship to thrive through this.
So you've got to be able to throw out terms like liturgy and Pope so that you save our friendship. That's a great strategy.
Eucharist.
Do you know what that means?
Sacrament.
Wait. Eucharist is actually from a Greek word, and since you and Anderson are a Greek expert, you should know what it means.
Yeah, it's
what
like,
does Eucharisto mean?
Eucharisto. Sacrament?
No.
Give me a hint.
Thankfulness. I give thanks.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I had no idea. Yeah, I don't remember any Greek that we learned. What year was that?
That was last year.
Oh, crap. I think people may have heard this before, but once we stopped that Greek class, which was, it made that summer 2011, worst summer of my life.
Yeah.
Pretty much easily.
I'd agree with that.
And it was because I was doing two classes at once. I've talked about this before, but I had always thought, okay, I'm going to put Greek away for a while when we ended our class in August and then come back to it so I can refresh. I have not opened that book once since August 2011.
Well done.
I basically know nothing.
Wow.
And I'm pretty sure I don't think I've even told you this in real life outside of the podcast, but I'm about to tell you right now, I don't know if I'm even going to go back to school because Northwestern, where I go, has changed the program from an accelerated program. Did I tell you this?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I have told you then. So
that's going to be like,
I was only
75.
I was supposed to finish my MDiv in the year 2013, December, which is only one more year, so not a big deal.
Not a big deal.
But now they've unaccelerated it, and so I won't be done until December 2015.
How about that?
And I don't think I want to do that. So I've looked at a couple options. Do I want to get my doctorate, or do I want to just stop?
Yeah.
I think I might just stop, because I don't know for sure I want to be a professor, and I think the only reason I would need a doctorate is if I want to be a professor. Can you think of any other reason that I would need a doctorate?
Yeah, no. No.
Unless I just want people to call me.
You might need to brush off that Greek and get a few other languages.
Yeah. Unless I become a doctor in something else, because it would be sweet to be Dr. Anderson.
Well, you know, we can probably find a way for that to happen.
I don't know if I'm going to be have a theological doctorate after all.
Yeah.
It's kind of a sad thing to think about, because I've been looking forward to it, but I don't know if it actually makes money, financial reasons. I was going to say money reasons. I don't know if it's financially wise. I don't know if it, like, there's any even a life goal point to me getting it, other than I just think it's cool.
Yeah. That's probably not the best life
goal. One of my professors said, unless you feel called to get your doctorate, don't pursue it, because it's super intense in your life. It'll just take it over.
Yeah.
So you must feel called.
I do feel called.
You feel the Lord beckoning you towards being a doctor.
Yeah.
You already seem like a doctor.
I do kind of seem like a doctor.
So you're almost there.
Getting there. Yeah. So the THM degree I'm doing right now, just Master of Theology.
Yeah.
So it's a one-year degree and mostly centered around writing a thesis. So I'm kind of doing a mini doctoral thesis right now.
I could do a THM. That'd be fun. Yeah. I like research and writing. I don't love languages.
You have to have a language component.
You have a really good knack for languages, Ben. I've told you that before, but I don't know if I ever told you publicly. You learn them quickly. You are pretty good at being able to teach others them. You helped me a lot last year. So I think you are going to excel in your program.
Yeah, we're doing German right now this fall.
Oh, cool.
So that's fun.
Nice.
Just German for reading, which is kind of nice. But yeah, so I'm busy writing my thesis right now. And in the spring, Matt Anderson.
Oh, tell people what it's about. It has to do with your recent change.
A little bit, yeah. So, well, it's changed just a bit because my original thesis was so huge, I'm only going to be able to do about a third of it. Mm-hmm. So I'll probably wind up doing the rest as part of my doctoral thesis eventually. But basically, what I was looking into was the relationship between justification and ecclesiology, which is the study of the church.
Mm-hmm.
So the first part of the thesis that I'm working on this fall is kind of historical in nature, where I'm doing a reading of the Reformation to argue that justification by faith was not what divided the Reformation churches from the Catholic Church, but was a symptom of the Reformation churches adopting a different ecclesiology.
Okay.
So tracing it back to Augustine and the Donatist controversy and going forward historically from there.
So basically, is it about the idea that we are justified as a community and not individually?
I think that would be part of it later on. I'm not going to get to those parts this year, unfortunately. Okay. What I realized is that, well, to put it in perspective, the chapter I'm writing right now is 15-page and growing quite rapidly.
Oh, man.
And it was originally supposed to be about a paragraph in how I originally envisioned my thesis. So the thing's growing exponentially, and there's no way that I'm going to be able to write everything I wanted to, but that's okay, because now I basically know what I want to do for my doctoral thesis.
Yeah.
So I'll be ready to go.
This is awesome. I would like to get updates on this, maybe on the show.
Yeah, and even beyond that, in the spring, when I finish my thesis, I will give a public defense, which you can certainly come to.
Can I? I will. Yeah. I totally will. I also, about what month will that be?
Probably April.
Nice.
Yeah.
How mad would you be if I booed you?
Oh, well, you know, would never vote for the sci-fi Christian.
Is that frowned upon?
Yeah, probably.
Acolyte.
Acolyte. Is this more your Catholic terms?
Yeah, I got my words up here. Angel.
Yeah, that one's Catholic.
Anointing. Apostles' Creed.
I'm pretty sure Protestants believe in that, too.
I know. I Googled Catholic words.
Oh, my gosh.
We're still friends. It's working.
Wow.
Okay.
How about that? It's like magic.
All right. Well, good.
Hope magic.
It's good to catch up. So you're in school. You're not working at church. You're going to Catholic church. We're still friends. All is well in the world.
How about that?
That seems quiet.
That's only in my right ear, too.
I tried to do a really awesome transition and it didn't work at all.
That's
I think it's time to get to the main event.
Yeah. Still only in my right ear.
Me too.
Something's messed up.
Whatever. Sorry, folks. Mortality.
Matt took over the technical side of everything.
Immortality.
Several months ago, so it's not my fault. It's his fault.
So when Ben begged me to allow him to come back onto the show.
I think it was the fans who begged you.
He came up with three ideas. One of these ideas we're going to talk about today, and I think it's awesome, Ben.
So do I.
The idea is it moral for us as Christians to be on board with the idea that with some scientific research and some scientific advancements, it's looking like we're heading towards a world where it's possible you wouldn't have to die.
Ever.
Ever. And we have covered this on the show before when we talked about cloning.
Yeah, but this is maybe a little different.
No, we're going to take it from a different perspective here. So, Ben, why don't you kind of give us a little bit of what you've been thinking about this topic? Because it sounds like it's been rolling around in your head for a little bit.
Yeah, I was actually really pondering this some today as I was preparing for the show, and I realized there's probably a good scholarly article in here somewhere, actually.
Yeah?
On the relationship between Christian doctrine and death. So maybe someday when I finish my doctorate, I will write a book on this topic.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
So will you refer back to this podcast?
Probably not.
Okay. All right, good.
But it's possible. You never know.
Yeah.
So, you know, science is rapidly, as you said, Matt, trying to eliminate death. And for the most part, we applaud this.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we'll talk a little bit more about where the line is between what we can applaud and what we have to oppose. But especially in science fiction, there's kind of a constant theme in a lot of books of humanity reaching the point where people effectively don't die, or at least not of natural causes. So if you die, it's because Ryan Strelo of Ryan Strelo Studios comes home and loses his mind and he beats us over the head with a shovel.
Yeah, so you can die, not necessarily of natural causes.
So disease is gone, old age is gone, and we just keep chugging along. And what occurred to me is this on the surface seems like a good thing, but how does this actually work with Christian theology, especially when we think about the fall and salvation? Death is a pretty major theme in Christian theology. So that's one thought that we can talk about is, does a world without death, is that compatible with what we believe as Christians? And if not, why not? If so, how does our conception of Christianity have to change? And then also, should we be suspicious from a cultural perspective that we instantly view a world without death as a good thing? You know, in other words, is that really a good thing, and is our gut reaction to that because it's genuinely would be good, or is it more of a cultural thing? In other words, there's cultures out there that would embrace death and see death as an important part of human existence, mm-hmm. And would be quite puzzled by our obsession in Western culture with immortality and longevity even. So is that because they've just kind of resigned themselves to death, or are they seeing something that we're not? So that's kind of what I thought we could talk about today.
I like it. I like it. And you had some questions, I think, to kick us off with this discussion?
Yeah. So I think maybe where we need to start is to go way back.
To the beginning.
To the beginning.
Yeah.
To the fall of man. And I was trying to think of where to
the
start.
The fall of Matt?
Well, yeah.
No, the fall of...
Fall of man.
The fall of man.
And Matt along with him. Part of what I was wondering is maybe we even need to start a step before the fall and think about how did God design... what would Adam and Eve's existence have been like if they hadn't sinned?
So we just brainstorm and just talk it out a little bit?
Yeah.
Okay, so no sin.
Yeah.
So a question often comes up, would there have been death before the fall?
Exactly.
And some people argue that, yes, there was death because things like they ate plants. So some sort of plant life would have had to have died.
Yeah.
Also, there's something about like naturally our skin cells die and our skin is like growing back. Like we have new skin every... so many days. Have you heard this before?
Yeah, like in 7 years.
You're like a whole, all your cells, you're like a whole different person.
Basically. Exactly.
Yeah, and so was that a natural thing back even before the fall?
Yeah, and maybe even to take it one step further, do we view the pre-fallen state as kind of the end game? In other words, if humanity doesn't fall, mm-hmm. does God intend for that pre-fallen state to be their final point? Is that where they're supposed to remain, or is there still some kind of paradise that God would have intended for humanity beyond that?
So would there had to have been an what we call end times if they never fell in the first place?
Yes.
Do you think it was inevitable that mankind would fall?
You know, maybe, but I think we have to at least allow for the theoretical possibility that they don't.
Yeah, definitely. Wouldn't the earth have been really full of kids?
Oh, yeah, so there's that.
Like, would he have given us technology to go to a different planet?
I don't know.
Would he have just transported us with his god powers?
Probably. I'm going to go with that one.
Okay, so I've always been under the impression that they probably wouldn't have died.
Right.
So in a sense, when we are... And then to go along with that, then the reason why death to us now feels so unnatural and it's hard, even when we know it... Everybody dies. Everybody knows this, but it still feels wrong when it happens. It's kind of going back to, well, pre-fall, we weren't supposed to die. And so that's why it's innate inside of us that we're not, that we don't want there to be death. And then with this striving to live forever, where does that come from? It's because people would argue it's inside of us. We feel like we're made to live forever because we are made to live forever.
Right. So I think that would be one take on it. The other take that you could say...
I love when you do this. Okay, so, yeah, that's one possibility. Let me now tell you the right answer.
No, I'm just throwing stuff out. Okay, there. I'm undecided.
Go ahead. What's next?
The other possibility would be that we were intended to die,
mm-hmm.
And that... The death that enters as part of the fall is more of a spiritual death or a corruption of death. And so what we're experiencing isn't joyful, but it's terrifying. It isn't seen as a transfer into what God has for us next. It's seen as an end to our essential being because we lose perspective on God's wider plan that he would have had for us in a pre-fallen state. So I think you can still account for those human impulses
mm-hmm.
If you view the fall, even if you say that there was some sort of death before the fall, that whatever we would have been talking about there would be essentially different than how death would be conceived of after the fall,
mm-hmm.
if nothing more than in a psychological and spiritual way, in the sense that now it's terrifying and there's a great deal of spiritual ambiguity attached to it.
Yeah, I like that. I would say... There seems to be some evidence just from some animal life and some plant life. Well, I shouldn't say animal life, but like we said before, there was some sort of death before the fall. So it's the Bible doesn't necessitate that there that those humans had to live forever, Adam and Eve.
Right.
That we just assume that because we think it's part of the curse that happened in Genesis 3.
Yeah, and Genesis 3 or in Genesis 2 even, God talks about, and he'll tell Adam and Eve, if you eat of this tree, you will die.
Yeah.
But the question is, what does that mean?
And what did it mean to them?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. You know, and we also have to account, you know, some of our interpretation here is going to depend on how literal we're reading mm-hmm. this story, too. We would all, I think, affirm some kind of literal pre-fallen state. Mm-hmm. But whether or not we're reading, you know, God literally said this word to word for to Adam and Eve, or whether it's humanity writing this later with our concepts of death being superimposed onto the story really impacts how much we can read out of that.
Yeah, I mean, keep going, and then I have a follow-up.
Oh, no, go ahead.
So basically, I think it really comes down to there's two possible ways that people tend to define this death that's talked about in Genesis 2 and then 3. It's basically either typical death, where you will physically die, and then the other way could be that they'd spiritually die. And I think that, a lot of people will go that direction because when they eat the fruit, they don't die instantly a physical death.
Right.
But they, what we call, fall. And so I think most people would argue that when he says, you will surely die, it's actually a spiritual death.
Yeah.
Is that where you would fall?
You know, I don't know, honestly. I think that I'm going to put on my negative theology cap here a little bit and say that I would have to affirm that death fundamentally changes in the fall of man, whether that is changing in the sense of now coming into existence for the first time or changing in its magnitude, in its omnipresence in humanity, in its frightening nature. However we view it, it has to fundamentally change. Mm-hmm. Something happens related to death at the fall. And so I would have to affirm that at the minimum, our impulse now with fighting against death is an attempt to undo whatever the negative aspect of that was.
So that innate fight against death proves that there was something that changed inside of us.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Even if we're fighting against something that would have existed before, it's changed so fundamentally that we might as well be fighting against a new thing, even if we affirm the existence of death prior to the fall.
Okay. Yeah. I think I can get on board with that. For my answer to that question is I think the death is a spiritual death, I guess I would have to say. Not necessarily physical, because clearly they didn't die instantly.
Right. Right.
Unless he just meant eventually. Uh-huh. You're going to die.
Eventually. That was a little tricky of God.
Yeah.
Especially since Adam lived to be like 1,000.
I know.
Like, must have hit like his 800th birthday and be like, I got you, God.
I called your bluff.
800 years. I'm still going strong.
Why do you think they lived so long back then? Let's just talk about it for a second. Was it like people say the earth had different oxygen, their air quality was better, and their food.
Where I'm going to go with this.
You don't think that Adam and Eve really existed?
Well, I think that they, to whatever extent they existed, we're not reading history.
Do you know
Genesis?
I've told you my take on it, right?
Yeah.
That I think Genesis 1 is more poetic telling of the creation, and Genesis 2 is where history starts.
Yeah, but I think that even if you affirm that Adam and Eve literally existed as kind of a primal pair, that you're not reading history in the way that you're reading history if you pull out, you know,
mm-hmm.
Go down to Barnes & Noble and then buy a textbook on the Civil War or whatever.
Yeah. But isn't it true that you think that real history in the Bible starts Genesis 11?
I think there's a genre change between Genesis 11 and Genesis 12. So Genesis 11, we have the Tower of Babel and Genesis.
Oh, sorry. I meant Genesis 12. So you think history starts Genesis. That's where we can take it as.
I'm hesitant to say history starts because, you know, even there, I think that's a fundamentally different view of history being written. But there is definitely a genre change in my mind between the first 11 chapters and the first 12. However, what I will affirm is that in Genesis 2, 3, however we conceive of Adam and Eve, there was at least some kind of primal fall of man. There has to be a literal event. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, just to something that Rick Lee, James, and I talked about,
yeah.
Voices of My Head podcast, is that the Catholic view on science and evolution and all that basically doesn't really take a view on those things. All it really says is that in the creation of the world, God has to be involved. You have to affirm that. And with the fall of man, there has to be some kind of original fall. And beyond that, there's a lot of room for speculation. So I think as long as we're affirming those things, we're in safe territory.
Yep, really looking forward to listening to you on that other podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
So, all right, continue.
Okay, so we kind of get past that initial issue, and then we come to the fall itself. Mm-hmm. And we kind of already answered this a little bit. The physical death may or may not have been a part of the fall, but we affirm that it fundamentally changed. So we affirm mm-hmm. that death enters at the fall.
Some sort of new death.
Okay, but there's one other part of this whole narrative that we have to account for before we can move on to Christ and his death and how we mm-hmm. deal with all that. Mm-hmm. And then we can start to answer some of these questions regarding modern ethics. And that's the part of the story we have to still deal with is the Tree of Life.
Ooh, yes.
Because Adam and Eve, they're given this curse, and then they're kicked out of the garden, mm-hmm. and God puts the angel, however we're reading this,
yes.
there's this angel that's put at the entrance of the garden to block them from getting to the Tree of Life so that they don't live forever.
Genesis 3:24, God, but it says he drove out the man, and at the east of the Garden of Eden, he placed a cherubim and a flaming sword that turned every way to guard the way to the Tree of Life.
Yeah. Yeah, so God does not want them to get back in and undo whatever it was that was done.
Mm-hmm. Or have access. To me, I've always read it as he doesn't want Adam and Eve to have access to the Tree of Life because this might have been some sort of, and I am drawing from this, it's not explicit, but the Tree of Life may have been providing them with some way of living forever.
Right.
Possibly. I mean, that's not explicit in the text, but it's something that I think is often taught, that not necessarily that, doesn't mean, that doesn't make it true, but.
Certainly.
Do you hear that?
Yeah. Sounds like your bathroom.
Wow, that picked up well.
Yeah.
There's water running in the bathroom, and it just came through the microphone. Let's continue.
I think it stopped now.
That was weird.
So, maybe it's the fountain of life in there.
Oh, the river that runs past the Tree of Life.
Yes.
In Revelation.
Yeah, so certainly there's some type of thing being affirmed here where God specifically is forbidding and blocking Adam and Eve and by extension humanity from getting access to it.
That angel's job sucks so much. He's just got to stand there forever in case anybody comes across it. And then, like,
why don't do angels stand?
Float around forever with a flaming sword? Like, how obvious is that, too? Like, why not hide the garden? You don't put a flaming sword there, God. Good thinking. Yeah, go towards the fire.
Maybe he did hide it. Because no one's found it.
I know, but if no one found it, why does he even have to have an angel guarding it?
Yeah. So, interesting thing about angels. You know who Thomas Aquinas is.
Oh, of course.
Okay. Just checking. So, Thomas Aquinas, at least I think it's him, theorizes that every angel is actually its own species.
Really?
And he does this by looking at humanity and saying humanity's a single species, but what differentiates us are accidental qualities. So, you know, the fact that I have brown hair and I look like this and I have this genetic personality trait and all that. So Aquinas is going to say that that's what makes us unique within the species of human.
Okay.
But since angels are incorporeal, they don't have any accidental qualities.
Okay.
Therefore, the only thing that could differentiate angels from each other is them being fundamentally different species.
That's an interesting theory. I don't know what I think about it, but
I think what I think generally about Thomas Aquinas, which is that he's way smarter than me.
Uh-huh.
So I'll go with that.
So you automatically, just because he said
it? No, I'm just messing around. But Aquinas is crazy smart.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I've never heard that brought up before.
Maybe that could be a future sci-fi Christian topic.
Angels? We've talked about doing angels for since day one.
Now we have some hardcore theology to throw in there.
All right, well, let's consider angels.
With Thomas Aquinas.
I've always wanted to argue with you the idea that demons cannot become physical beings, whereas you think they can become physical beings. You think they can manifest physically. I don't think they can manifest physically.
Maybe there's a demon right here. getting ready to manifest physically. That would be pretty cool if we were having that debate and just a demon appeared.
It's like, debate over.
I think you'd have to admit that I was right.
I would admit it, and that would be a really popular episode.
Yeah.
Like, the first demon interview in, like, well, in Christian history.
Would we put him on the air?
Yeah.
Isn't that a little irresponsible?
I mean, we got, like, this is an interview that most people wouldn't get. I mean, there's a word for it that I'm trying to think in the press when you get something that nobody else gets. We got the scoop. We got the scoop.
Exclusive?
The exclusive, yeah. I mean, that's pretty big.
Yeah, but it's a demon. I don't know, you know, we've got a pretty awesome audience here at the Sci-Fi Christian. I don't know if we should be giving the forces of hell, you know, a microphone, a platform to expound their ideas.
Yeah, I suppose.
Probably. I mean, would we have Adolf Hitler as a guest in the Sci-Fi Christian?
I mean, impossible.
I suppose we would. Yeah, not like approving.
No, not approving of it. Like a debate, a friendly debate. Well, maybe not friendly.
would this be a friendly debate with the demon?
I wouldn't be pro his ideas.
Would you be respectful?
I mean, I think in Christian love, I would cast him away in the name of Jesus.
Yeah.
I would freak out. If a demon manifested in my empty chair here, put on my suit coat, which is hanging there.
It's a little disturbing now.
I'd just start naming Jesus and hope for the best. I don't think I would.
So we wouldn't even get to the
interview. I don't think I would get to the interview. I think I would be
in the name of Jesus, I command you to have this interview with us on the Sci-Fi Christian.
But with our powers combined,
and we're back with Azrael, Prince of Demons.
Protestant and Catholic together, we would defeat him for sure.
Oh yeah.
Plus, I call the cherubim with the flaming sword.
I would be safer because I have my crucifix on.
I'm not wearing a crucifix.
Yeah, you're screwed.
I do have a cross over here.
I don't think
just
that
throw
counts.
It at him.
Jesus,
like
isn't
a
on
spear.
It, so, yeah.
Wow.
Maybe get some holy water.
Listen. There's people in the hallway of this apartment. This new microphone or the new adjustments we made the last time you're here is picking up everything.
I know. How about that?
Wow. Anyways. Where were we? Cherubim? Flaming swords?
Yeah, we were talking Tree of Life. And
Tree of Life is pretty sweet.
You said that the angel had a raw deal.
Oh,
and that's
yeah.
where we got sidetracked.
Oh. Well, okay. Then back to that, because I think that's an interesting idea. If it's the same guy, because God could just put him on rotations. Like, you don't have to keep that guy there for thousands of years. But let's assume it's the same guy. Because it seems to indicate, God put at the east of the Garden of Eden, he placed the cherubim. And is that like, is that a group? Is that plural? Could it be?
I don't know.
And a flaming sword.
Know any Hebrew.
So. I'm going to assume it's multiple angels that just take turns, like security guards. Like you wouldn't have somebody guarding, let's say, a hospital. And just had the same guy sit there for years, you'd give him a break.
Well, let me put one more twist on it for you. Is the Garden of Eden, with its paradise-esque qualities, subject to time in the way that the rest of creation is subject to time?
Well, I think it's clear, based on where we're at as a country, that Garden of Eden was originally in America.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean,
probably right here.
Right here in Mounds View, Minnesota.
Ride Strelow Studios is it.
Okay, so I've always kind of thought of the Garden of Eden as being a place that you couldn't actually get to anymore.
Right, yeah.
Like maybe like a different dimension.
You can't look it up on Google.
No, it's not on Google Maps.
So if it's a different dimension.
I'm going to check it though right now.
Okay,
well, you talk for a second.
So if it's a different dimension, it may have different rules of time, may even exist in eternity, whatever that is. And therefore, the angel may be not subject to temporality in the same way that we are. So it could be pretty meaningless to think of the angels taking shifts if that's the case.
Trying to get directions to the Garden of Eden. It's actually pulled up a few places here, even in Minnesota. I don't think it's the real Garden of Eden, though.
Is it a strip club?
It sells essential oils, natural products, massage oil, China rain, whatever that is. I'm not gonna do Google Maps to this place.
We probably shouldn't visit there.
Okay. So yeah, it does not show up on Google Maps.
All right. So that's definitive. If Google Maps can't get you to the Garden of Eden, nobody can.
I'm gonna put Garden of Eden, Paradise. Let's see what happens.
It's probably going to get even worse.
Oh my gosh, it's only 22 minutes away.
Hey, that's about where I live.
It is.
That would make sense.
It's in Minneapolis. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
So, okay. Sorry to get you off track there, but that is interesting. Poor guy, security guard, cherubim. I think that would make a great reality show.
Yeah. So, anyway, I think the essential thing we're affirming here is that God, whatever it was that changed regarding death in the fall, God does not want it undone. I think we have to affirm that as well.
This Tree of Life talks really got me thinking, so I went to Revelation.
Yeah, there's a Tree of Life there, too.
Yeah. In Revelation, it says, blessed are those who wash their robes. This is 22:14, that they may have the right to the Tree of Life and may go through the gates into the city. So is part of the so is this metaphorical, or is part of the afterlife actually eating from that tree?
I don't know. Could be metaphorical. Certainly, I think we'd affirm that whatever it's representing, literally or metaphorically, is going to be part of the new heaven and the new earth. So we'll go with that.
Do you think? Okay, Revelation 22:1, and a few verses in, then the angel showed me the river of the water of life, as clear as crystal, flowing from the throne of God and of the Lamb. Down the middle of the great street of the city, on each side of the river, stood the Tree of Life, bearing 12 crops of fruit, yielding its fruit every month.
Ooh, better get there quick.
Yeah.
And the not a lot of fruit.
And the leaves of the tree are for the healing of nations. Okay, I'll stop reading there. But no talk of that cherubim with the sword, so it looks like he gets off the hook at the end.
Yeah. So that's pretty significant, too, because I think we have to affirm that whatever got taken away is being restored at the end of time.
Yeah, good thinking.
So, but God doesn't want humanity to do it themselves.
He has to do it.
Yeah. So now we come to Jesus.
The great mediator.
The great mediator. And Jesus...
The second Adam?
Dies. Yes?
The second Adam dies.
He dies. What does that mean, then, if death ceases to exist? Does Christ's death have any meaning?
Yes.
Even if death is no longer a relevant category?
Well, okay. Let's take this to its logical conclusion. Let's assume there's science around that could keep us alive now forever.
Yeah.
Even with that being said, we've already talked about how I could kill you. You wouldn't die of natural causes, but I could stab you in the neck, let's say, hypothetically speaking. So then you would die. So even with science and with the mass population not really dying for a long time, it doesn't mean there is no need for death, because death does still exist. It's just rarer.
Okay, well, let's say science also invents invulnerability. Gotcha.
Let's say, okay, how about this?
I'm going to keep backing you into a corner until you answer the question. Does Christ's death have meaning without the presence of death?
Okay, so we're in a world where nobody dies. Everybody lives.
Science has really gone hog wild.
Okay.
And we're doing well.
Well, luckily he died before science came along, so there has been a sacrifice. So we can now be atoned for our sins. So yes, it's still Christ's death still means something, because eventually the world ends. And at that, I mean, because we know that right now, when the end happens, there will be people alive. It's not like he's going to wait until every human dies. Well, maybe he is going to wait until every human dies. I guess we don't know. But what if that's what his plan is? Just to wait until we go extinct?
Yeah.
God. Okay. So let's assume, though, that everybody doesn't die. So at some point, he's just going to end it anyway. So it doesn't necessarily matter if we die, as long as we have either a saving faith or not.
Science cannot account for God in the sense that it can make us invulnerable to everything but Armageddon.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. I'm down with that.
Okay, good.
But maybe the way to rephrase it then is, yes, we'd have to say it does have meaning. But how could the gospel be communicated as salvation from death to a culture where death does not exist?
Yeah, that'd be a tough sell. Because I think a lot of times, and this is sad, but a lot of times a way to win people over to get them to become Christians is to be like, hey, good news, you don't have to go to hell.
Exactly.
And so if they're like, I'm not going to die anyways.
Yeah.
Then that's not as easy of a sell. I'm not saying that that's the best way to evangelize to somebody, but if we're honest, I think that that's a lot of people come to faith because the alternative is so bad.
Now, we could say that hell still exists as a category, but it's slightly less effective sell when you say Jesus may come back in the next 5 trillion years.
Mm-hmm.
Be ready.
Be ready. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so it might be tougher to evangelize.
Right.
So there's still meaning there. It's just, it takes the stakes away.
The whole, you could die tonight.
Same reason that we don't like prequels. Because the stakes are missing. We already know all these characters are going to live.
Exactly. Unless it's like a way back prequel that doesn't include the same characters.
Yeah, like Prometheus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't know who was going to live.
Me either.
I was so like, that was a pretty effective prequel.
Pretty good.
But I like your analogy.
Also.
Still.
Also, I think that as we saw in such great books as The Lord of Light by Roger Zelazny.
Yes.
That eventually we could lose the knowledge of the true gospel.
That's true.
Because some people could just set themselves up. Like, if there was a certain population that kept themselves alive and let other people continue to die, they could set themselves up as godlike people,
yes.
Godlike creatures.
So the possibility even exists that humanity effectively becomes godlike.
Yes, and that maybe Christianity almost becomes legend or almost becomes extinct. I don't know if we can really believe that as Christians, that there will ever be a time where Christianity isn't. Yeah,
but I think you're getting at kind of where I was trying to go, which is that is death such an essential part of the Christian message that the elimination of death would basically render Christianity irrelevant? We could still say effectively.
Yeah.
I'm talking at a practical level, not because you're right. We still have to affirm Jesus is going to come back and there's going to be end times and all that. But at a practical level.
You know what? I think there's a chance it would.
Yeah.
Would affect it negatively. It would make people less interested in Christianity. But that's not okay because in the sense that that shouldn't be the selling point, that you get saved from hell.
Right, right.
But I think it is so in so many cases. And yeah, so I could see it becoming a thing where people are like, well, whatever, I'm good. I don't need that because I'm just going to, like, you've been saying this world was going to end for like 3,000 years. It's not going to end.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that even if we don't make that our selling point and we're not going out there being nuts with it, if you eliminate that part of Christianity, you have fundamentally changed what Christianity is. Even if we're not, you know, the crazies who are, you're going to hell, you know, all that.
Mm-hmm.
Death still plays such an important part in Christianity. For example, in my new tradition, Catholicism, the Mass is centered around a celebration of the death of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
If death ceases to exist, does the Mass have any meaning at that point for what we believe is taking place there? In the sense that we believe that in that moment, the death of Christ is made present for us. Well, say we flash forward 10,000 years and nobody's died in 10,000 years. Is the Mass worth anything
to us? Because we've lost the sting of death?
Right. And I think, you know, Catholicism is maybe where it's most explicit, but you could take the same principle and extrapolate it out to every Christian denomination out there.
Yeah, you know, I've never thought about how the importance of death, like what role it plays in our belief system.
Right.
Because there's so much talk about live today for eternity, like preparing for the afterlife.
Yeah.
And live every day like it's your last, and how much our life is influenced by this idea that we know we're not here forever. There's things we want to accomplish before it's over.
Right.
Like, what would it do to not just our faith, but all areas of our life if we had all this time all the time in the world, really?
Yeah, definitely. So, now the rubber meets the road, Matt Anderson.
I'm ready.
I'm going to ask you the tough question.
I'm going to answer it ineffectively.
Science is working on trying to eliminate death as much as possible.
Yeah.
Do you support this as a Christian?
Well, let's take a step back for a second.
Okay.
We'll often hear stories of people nowadays that maybe get sick, older people, and they're being kept alive by machines, or they have some sort of illness and they're being kept alive by machines. And you'll hear people make the argument, you just got to let them go naturally. That's just the way God intended. Like in the same way we're against euthanasia, because we don't want to take death into our own hands. We let God do his work. A lot of people argue you shouldn't be on machines that keep you alive, because if your body's ready to go, it's God's timing for you.
Yeah.
Okay.
So. And that is the stance of the Catholic Church, by the way, that okay. unnatural prolonging of life mm-hmm. is immoral.
Yeah. So with that in mind, currently, if we're looking ahead to should we keep people alive forever, now I feel the words want to come out to say that's unnatural.
Yeah.
When we've already talked earlier in the show about how death feels unnatural.
Right.
And so now we have these dueling ideas that yes, death feels wrong, but living forever feels wrong too.
So if we were to say absolute immortality is out, let's just I'm not saying we are definitively.
I mean, before we go too far, we should say, of course, we believe in the end, afterlife, in paradise, in forever, have a new earth. We'll live forever there. No problem then. We're just talking about right now in these physical bodies.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess we'll be in these bodies again, the glorified bodies.
So let's say, just for the sake of argument, that we rule absolute immortality out. We say, getting to the point where death is impossible, mm-hmm. or where people live forever, and unless you get stabbed, you know, in the street, then you're going to live forever.
Mm-hmm.
If we say that that's immoral, and we affirm that efforts to, say, cure cancer are moral and good, where's the line?
Yeah.
In other words, if we make it so that people can live 20,000 years and then you'll die naturally, is that acceptable?
All right, I hear what you're saying. So we are currently seeking out medicines to prolong people's life,
yeah.
but not for any sort of crazy length type, just regular 10, maybe 15 years. But at what point is it okay to say, let's give them 30 more years, let's give them 100 more years,
yeah.
let's give them 1,000 more years?
Like 500 years ago, man, you turned 30 this year,
correct? I did. Yay.
So 500 years ago, I mean, we'd be carting you off to the nursing home right now, because like the average age is 34 or something okay. like that, you know.
Yeah.
And people don't fact check me too closely on that,
because
I honestly,
you're just making a point. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So, but certainly we can affirm that way back in ye olde times, people did not live that long.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you make it past 10, you're doing good.
Yeah.
You know, and I think we can all affirm that we're happy that you and I have more than 10 years to live.
Yes.
I don't think there's any question or debate that that's good. But yeah, it does become a tricky question, that how much is too much?
Yeah, where do we draw the line? If I think a lot of people would even say, yeah, 100 years is fine. Give them an extra 100.
Yeah.
But then where do we say that people shouldn't live that long? Because the Bible has people living 900 years.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I think you're right. If we had people living 200 years, well, that's different.
Yeah, it's different, but it's not so bad.
It doesn't seem wrong. But if we start talking, you know, Julius Caesar's still running around today with his, you know, he's in line for the iPhone 5 mm-hmm. or whatever. That, you know, 1,000 years, man.
Yeah.
You should be dead. Or 2,000 years.
Yeah. So why? Okay, let me ask you a question. Let me turn it back on you.
Yeah.
What do we do with this clashing feelings of death is wrong, but living forever is wrong?
Yeah. I think maybe this goes to maybe the last main topic that I thought would be interesting to hit, which is how much of that death is wrong comes from our culture of yeah. individualization, mm-hmm. where we're ultra individual, and, you know, the deification of youth. So how much of it comes from that? Because there are other cultures that we can find that would say death is a good thing, you know, and living your life is a good thing, but getting to death, that's not something that should be avoided. It's something that should ultimately be embraced as part of the human experience.
When you say deification of youth, you mean how youth is so looked well upon,
yeah,
and we don't treat our elderly with respect anymore?
Yeah, well, you know, regardless of how we treat our elderly, we see being young as the ideal.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to prolong youth as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that type of thing.
So then what is your question with that in mind?
So is our natural repulsion to death cultural
okay.
or is it part of humanity?
I've always felt like it was part of humanity. I've never thought of it as a cultural thing, but here I am living in a culture that views it as wrong or hard or you know, unfair sometimes. And so I would have to step out of my culture to be able to know if it is just us or if it's something that's universal.
Yeah.
Because it'd be easy for me to say it's universal because that's what I've always known. And that's what people around me always know. But like you're saying, there are cultures apparently that embrace death.
Right.
Like the Vikings.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's true.
I don't know either.
Klingons.
We'll say that they do.
Okay.
So I think that you really have to kind of try and step out of your culture a little bit to try and answer mm-hmm. this question. That's very difficult to do because you could also make the opposite argument that they're the ones who are culturally screwed up
mm-hmm.
or probably the more sensible position that we're both kind of off a little bit. Maybe mm-hmm. there's cultures that are too obsessed with death or in terms of it being a good thing. We view it as too much of a bad thing. That still kind of leaves us with this muddled middle ground where we're not quite sure how to view it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if I actually have any answers for our audience today, Matt.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What? We're just going to leave them with that? So the episode title is The Morality of Immortality.
Yeah.
So
I think that I would affirm absolute immortality would be immoral.
Okay, yes.
I would affirm...
So the sci-fi Christian agrees that living forever in this form, wrong.
Yes. I would affirm that... efforts to prolong life as they stand right now with curing disease and helping us, you know, not die at 30 are moral.
How do your new Catholic beliefs, what is the stance on, like, prescription medicine?
Oh, it's all good.
But just specifically the machines that keep people alive, that's
wrong.
Well,
that's like, you know, if... grandpa's been in a coma for 20 years and he has one brain cell that's still firing and he would have died a long time ago, but we've got him pumped so full of drugs where he's basically Frankenstein walking around, you know, at that point it gets...
So that's where they say it's wrong.
Yeah. Okay. You know, it obviously doesn't say quite that in the catechism, but that type of thing where it's just like...
So that was a paraphrase.
Yeah. It's so out there where this person would have been dead a long time ago. It's not even that, you know, we're keeping them on life support because we're trying to revive them, but they've got no shot mm-hmm. of ever being conscious again, you know. And I'd be hesitant to get too specific on what would and would not fall into that category, but I would affirm that there are cases where we're just, you know, it gets weird.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right. Okay, so for the sake of the show, I think I could jump on board with the idea that, because when my grandpa, speaking of grandpas, when he was in his last few weeks, it got to the point where he was not breathing on his own. He was on a ventilator and he was unconscious. So, he was basically gone. The only thing that kept him alive were the machines, and the family had come to a decision that we would take him off the machines, knowing that the outcome would be that he would die. But we just felt like, I even think that maybe he might have had something in his will that said he doesn't want to be kept alive. So there's many people that would actually say, I don't want to be kept alive by machines.
Yeah.
So there is kind of this feeling like that there's something kind of weird about that. Like we should be able to either, our bodies should be able to function for themselves, or we're just not supposed to be alive.
Yeah. I mean, it really has to be a case by case basis, but yeah.
Yeah.
I think that we'd agree that there's
so for the sake of the show, to kind of come to some conclusions, I'll jump on board with you that machines like that keep people alive, like what was happening to my grandpa,
not good.
Not okay.
But other...
For prolonged periods of time. If it's a point where it's like...
Anderson needs a respirator for 2 hours.
Keep him on for even a week because we know that this is for their recovery.
Yeah.
Then it's okay.
Yeah.
But not if it's like...
We're not anti-respirator.
Yeah, it's inevitable. That's what I'm saying. If it's inevitable that they are going to die...
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And we would also affirm that efforts to cure disease and prolong life within a limited capacity would be good.
Yes.
I think we could also affirm that there is something in humanity that is naturally afraid of death and naturally wants to avoid it.
And it could be, because we're Christians, we talk about maybe this goes back to the fall.
Yeah.
If we're honest, though, it could just be our natural instincts to not want to die.
Right.
Just like, I mean, I don't want to take this too far, but just like animals in the world, they also fear death. They avoid being killed.
Yeah.
It could just be an instinctual thing. Not talking about evolution or anything like that, but just something that's inside living beings that they don't want to die.
Yes. And I think we can also affirm that our culture is unnaturally obsessed with a fear of death. And
YOLO.
With you. Yeah.
Do you know YOLO?
Oh my gosh.
You only live once.
Yeah. You'll never hear me say that.
YOLO.
Gosh.
I can't believe I said that on the show.
I can't YOLO. Either. And you censor me on the show.
Well, YOLO doesn't need to be censored.
Yeah, it does.
Why?
Stupidity.
Oh, okay. There's no like inappropriate meaning behind it, though, as far as I know.
No, but inappropriate jokes are funny.
YOLO.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay.
You can do that when Kobe's here. He'd probably enjoy that.
Yeah, okay.
I had to get my shot in at Kobe.
No,
today.
No problem.
Yeah.
He's
in my contract.
He fought back against you in the most recent Sci-Fi Feedback episode.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. Hello. Good to
you. Maybe I'll listen to that someday.
Okay.
I lost my train of thought now. So we can kind of set up.
So you said unnaturally obsessed.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So we can kind of set up a few boundaries where we would say this is wrong if it goes this far. This is wrong if it goes this far. But what I don't think we can do is arrive at a definitive conclusion that says this is where the border is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's okay. I'd be curious to hear our audience's thoughts,
yes.
though, on how you, what other borders you might draw in terms of affirming this is good or this is bad, so we can get closer to that point and kind of
yeah, that would be interesting.
Out, yeah, what Christian morality
maybe
is.
Maybe a follow up on some future episode to see where people fall on this.
Yeah, we'll see if we get good responses.
Yeah,
if we I get, don't want to promise.
No, yeah. I mean this is no promise. We get some lame responses
like Roger in Florida.
Whatever. I might dig out from the archives our clone episode. I think it's going to tie into this a little bit. Maybe I'll release that as a time loop episode.
Yeah, I think that could be good because it's a relevant side issue. You know, I think there we're talking about prolonging life in other ways.
Yeah.
Here we're talking about not anything crazy like transfer of consciousness or cloning yourself. But
that was a good conversation.
Yeah,
Do you remember we had so much feedback? We actually had a whole episode just on feedback of that episode.
We did.
I should combine them all and make it one supersized clone episode.
That'd be a good time.
Okay. So wow.
I think that's it.
All right. The great top. Great. I was going to say talk and topic at the same time.
Yeah.
Great topic and great talk, Ben.
Thank you, sir. It's always fun to be back on the show.
Yep. Glad to have you here. So, as he said, give us a call at 612-4121 SFC. Or you could email us at
thescifichristian.feedback@thescifichristian.com.
Feedback at thescifichristian.com. So
now that's only in my left ear. You must have things jacked up here, man.
I'll
have to take a look at your technical setup.
Well, that's all from here. I'm Matt Anderson.
I am Ben the Catholic DeBono.
And we are the Sci-Fi Christians, signing off.